Welcome to Family Matters, the Adoption UK podcast, sharing stories, conversations and information. My name is Emma and I'm your host for this episode. I'm joined today by Sarah Fry and Helen Willis from the Beeley Foundation. I'm going to start by asking you to introduce yourselves, please.
Hi, Emma. It's lovely to be here today. So I'm Sarah. I'm an adoptive parent of two children, and I started the Beeley Foundation in 2020, so 5 years ago, in the middle of COVID. And we've developed a range of kind of expertise on things, one of which is disability benefits that we're going to talk about today.
And I'm Helen. Hello, everybody. I'm also from Beeley. I work with Sarah. I've been doing it for about 3 years, I think. About three years, maybe. I'm also actually a volunteer for Adoption UK. So I am now and always have been a solo adopter. And along with a friend, we co-facilitate the Adoption UK solo Zoom a couple of times a month with prospectives and people who are looking after. So if you haven't been, little bit of advert, come and join us. It's a very nice place. And we're Sarah and I are both also trustees for a local peer support group. In my spare time, as I say, I am actually a parent of an adopted teenager.
Wonderful. Thank you both for that. And can you tell our listeners a little bit more about the Beeley Foundation?
Yeah, so as I said, started it in 2020, so mid-COVID. And really it was to kind of meet the gaps that I'd experienced as a parent, particularly in regards practical support. So stuff like trauma responsive support in the home. So having an extra person who gets trauma, who understands the needs and the outlook of adopted children, and other things like disability benefits, and getting information on how to apply for those, how to look for financial sources of support. And so we work across England currently with families all over the place. The benefit with COVID was everybody learnt to work remotely and be on Zoom. So all of the services that we deliver are done remotely. And we reach as many families as we can.
And sometimes Scotland and Welsh, Scottish and Welsh families and Northern Irish families as well. So whoever comes our way.
Across the UK then.
Indeed.
And in terms of families, is that all families who parent care experiences children or just adoptive families?
So we're set up to support any family that's providing a permanent home to children who've been care experienced. The majority of our families are adoptive families, I think, because of our kind of in-house kind of knowledge. That's the world that we know. These are the networks that we inhabit.
I think also because we're a small charity, lots of people come to us through word of mouth. So people come to us because they know somebody that knows one of us or knows somebody that's been talking to one of us. But we do have people contacting us from other care experience families as well from time to time.
Yeah. Yeah, it's that knowledge of what it's like, I think, to be providing a permanent home to a child that has had potentially a really challenging time being parented or perhaps with other experiences in their first family. Being able really to provide that support to those parents who are then, you know, have committed to providing a permanent home to their children. And really that's why we wanted to use the metaphor of the Beeley rope, really, because that kind of idea that it's somebody stood guiding, helping, providing that little bit of a safety net to allow you to do, you know, to parent your children to the best you can, to allow them to recover, to develop, to flourish, but just to give you that little bit of extra practical support when you need it.
And in terms of the practical support, does that predominantly come into supporting families to access financial support like disability living allowance because of the hardships you see that they're facing? And a little bit more detail about that would be great.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we see huge, huge issues with families. I mean, I'm sure it predated the cost of living crisis, but that certainly hasn't helped. And, you know, families really, really struggling to balance the needs of their children and their capacity to work and to earn a living. And we conducted some research with Newcastle University last summer to look at this particular question. And our results, some of our results were in the Adoption Today magazine in December. And we saw huge issues with either one parent or sometimes both parents being unable to earn money, being reliant on benefits, but also, you know, impact on parental health because of the needs of caring for their children when children, you know, can't be in school all the time or, you know, have distressing behaviours at home. There are huge issues of poverty, actually, in a lot of our families. And I think it's a topic that really goes a bit under the radar, doesn't it? It's not discussed, you know, it's not something that is easy to talk about anyway. But I think particularly it's a particularly difficult thing to raise your hand and say, actually, we're struggling as a household.
And it comes into then, I guess, a lot of families aren't aware of support they can access or think they can't access certain support as a family.
Yeah, absolutely. And it takes us nicely onto disability benefits because I would say, I mean, I particularly felt so strongly about wanting to spread the word about disability benefits because, you know, I found myself unable to work for many, many, many years. And it was another parent that told me, oh, actually, did you know that definitely your child would be eligible for DLA? And that made an enormous difference to us as a family. And I thought that all out of, you know, there was no other professional that had kind of raised that as a potential source of income, you know, or support that we were absolutely eligible for.
Indeed, our experience is that sometimes professionals who are supporting the family are the first to go, oh, well, would that be relevant for you? I'm not sure about that. I don't know whether that would be possible. And we're the ones, as a kind of peer support, other parents saying, absolutely, definitely your child and the distress they face and the challenges they are dealing with and the challenges you as a family are dealing with are absolutely going to give you the evidence to be able to apply for this benefit.
Yeah.
And it's really important to us, actually, that our children do have access to this support because they need extra support, they need extra help, they deserve extra support and extra help, because if you look at the reasons behind the challenges they're facing, the challenges the families are dealing with, the day-to-day reality of living in many, many of our households across the country, our children are struggling, and we need to give them the best possible chances we have. And that often does involve us being at home. It does involve us being available. It also involves things like replacing broken stuff sometimes.
Absolutely. Replacing broken TVs. I remember one parent I spoke to, I did some workshops with them, with parents in the summer. And one mum said she'd replaced the telly 10 times. In a short number of years and got an absolute expert at finding secondhand TVs on eBay, you know. And so it's the cost of, you know, additional things, you know, or I don't know, the fact
expensive
that
expensive socks.
Expensive socks. Yeah. Yes, sensory clothing, you know, and special dietary food. Or the fact that our kids sometimes can't access things like after school clubs, they can't access, you know, your typical childcare. So you have additional costs there because they might need one-to-one in an after-school club, or you might need to employ somebody to come at home. So there's lots of reasons why, you know, everybody should know about this potential support. And in our experience, the vast, vast majority of children who've experienced developmental trauma and been through the care system have needs that often make them eligible for this financial benefit.
And so do children have to be diagnosed with a condition in order to be eligible?
Shall I pick that one up?
Yeah, do you want to talk about DLA?
I think the short answer to that is absolutely not. You do not have to have a diagnosis. I can answer that straight, but probably more helpfully, say that the test is only whether or not a certain child needs more care, significantly more care and more support and more help than a typically developing child of the same age. And you'll probably hear us say that more than once, because that is a recurring theme for us. That is the only test. Obviously, if your child has a diagnosis, whether that might be developmental trauma around attachment, it might be lots of our children also have neurodivergent diagnoses, or they're on the pathway for an ASD or ADHD assessment, or there's suspicions there might be FASD, but there's not actually proof. All of those things are helpful, all of those things contribute, but fundamentally, in order to be able to secure disability living allowance, or in Scotland, of course, child disability payments, CDP, in order to access DLA or CDP, and the same applies to personal independence payment and adult disability payment for the older ones, but I'm going to talk a little bit about DLA first, which is up to 16. The absolute test is whether or not the care needs and the support needed is significantly greater than a child of the same age. And indeed, I'm happy to share that we have DLA in our family, and that's not because it's related to diagnoses as such, but it is related to the challenges that we face and are grappling with day to day.
And so when you apply for DLA, is that you provide any examples of what you've experienced in the home, or depending on the age of the child, what's, say, happened in nursery and what professionals feel your child sits against their peers? Is that all play into the application process then?
I'm going to be very honest and say up front that the disability living allowance form is not the nicest in the whole universe. So you probably want to find cake, you want to find coffee, you want to find wine, depends what your crutch of the moment is, and you will want to set aside some time. And that itself is hard. Mm. It can be hard just to find the time, but it is worth doing. The form, in order to apply, you literally go through a form. We would recommend that probably that you phone the helpline number from the DWP, which you can find literally if you type into Google or something, DWP Google, into DWP DLA helpline, and it'll give you the number.
And in Scotland, it would be the
child disability payment number. You have to phone them, and then they will send you a form. You can still fill it in online, but you get a date by which you have to fill it in. It doesn't matter if you miss that date, it's not the end of the world, but they will only backdate to the date you send it in unless you send it by the date they ask you to. So that can make a difference in terms of the amount of money you get. So we do recommend that you phone, simply because you get a bit more money. And for lots of us, actually, having a deadline is quite helpful, because if we have a deadline, we make ourselves do it. Otherwise, it sits on the in tray for 6 months or 9 months, or possibly, yes, I tried that last year and I chose I should try it again. So the form is quite long, but it does go, it goes through a whole load of questions. Starts off by asking you some questions about your child, you know, basic name and address type stuff. It asks you some questions around, it does ask you about diagnoses. It does ask you about health conditions as well, though. And that's where you can put in some of the names that we use to describe the conditions that our children may exhibit, regardless of diagnoses. But then there are lots and lots of sections. The two big questions are, there are two elements to DLA in terms of what you're looking at, or CDP in Scotland. And the two elements are care needs, how much support you need, your child needs with their day-to-day care, whether that's prompting them to brush their teeth, whether that's going along to the Beavers with them, because actually they can't go to Beavers unless you are actually present with them, because they can't actually manage it on their own. So when all the other parents drop off and leave and go, yes, I can go home and have an hour and a half off, you're sitting there thinking, wouldn't that be lovely? Whether it's thinking about bedtimes and how long bedtimes take and how much time it takes to get them from the very beginning of bedtime to actually being able to leave their room, or some of us obviously don't even have that capacity. So that's all under care needs. And then there's also mobility, which is getting around, which is out and about. Does your child need supervision? Does your child need looking after? Can they recognise how to behave in a car park that will keep them safe? Can they recognise how to deal on the side of a road? What happens if a police car goes past and a siren sounds? Can they keep themselves safe in that environment, or are they likely to panic and run off all of a sudden? All of those things, you will need to go through the form and answer questions. Lots of them are yes, no, but then lots of them have boxes, and you need to sit and go through the box and just enter anecdotes. And as you said, absolutely, stories about what happens in your day-to-day life. Diagnoses, reports, information from professionals is all really helpful. You also will want to include information potentially from school or from nursery, from a social worker. But ultimately, what you're looking to do is to give a clear picture of your child, a clear picture of the day-to-day impact that what's going on for them has on their ability to live their life to their full potential.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I was just thinking as Helen was speaking actually about some of the barriers that stop people applying. And I think one of them is just the fact that we normalize, you know, I know this as a parent myself, we kind of, yeah, when you're describing all those things that, you know, you might do, accompanying to Beavers and standing for 2 hours over the toothbrush and sitting upstairs for 3 hours at night in the evenings, you know, they just become our normal, don't they? They become our everyday life, and it's just what we need to do for our children to support them in their routines. And I think that's one of the reasons sometimes we can think, oh, this isn't something that's going to be relevant for me because this is just what I do. And absolutely, it's what we do. It's absolutely, you know, part of what we take on and part of what we want to do to support our kids. But it sometimes that kind of thinking can get in the way of us thinking, actually, this is well over and above what a typical 6-year-old, 10-year-old, 12-year-old, 14-year-old would need from their parents. And so, yeah, it's really, and keeping a diary is a good idea, isn't it, Helen?
Yeah. It's a really good, if after listening to this, you think, oh, I wonder what I should actually be doing here. One of the very first things you can do is just take a piece of paper and start to write down when you notice things you're doing to support your child, and having a diary of what happens day to day, minute by minute. So and I'm going to talk about toothbrushing again, because whenever I talk to someone about DLA, it seems to involve conversations about brushing teeth in some form or another. As an example, lots of people say, well, you know, they do usually brush their teeth in the end. OK, and what does that look like? Well, I have to make sure that I've got the toothpaste on the toothbrush already to make sure it's not straight after dinner or else they get really upset. But we usually manage it around this time. And then I have to put the thing on, the music on, and usually have to play the music a couple of times before they actually pick the toothbrush up. And then if we're lucky, they'll do their teeth. I mean, obviously I have to do them again afterwards or else they wouldn't actually be clean. But we're getting there with that. But then the other evening, you know, it was probably half an hour that I was just stood there, and it is hard to stay patient. And this is the stories that people tell. But as Sarah said, that's perfectly normal for us. I didn't even remember that doing teeth took a long time. In fact, the only time I remembered was last week. I went downstairs and I said to my husband, we did teeth. Like, yes, only 5 minutes ago we went upstairs, and we were both shocked. And then we remembered that most people, probably that's what happens in their house, is that it only takes 5 minutes. So it can be a really good example of the reality that is just normal for us as parents.
Because you don't know what's happening in other people's homes, do you? You only know your own home and your own family. Yeah. And if you're a parent to care experienced children, and you haven't had a birth child, there isn't maybe that comparison of what might be typical and what is developmental trauma then, or attachment difficulties. Yeah. And so judging that must be really difficult. And I imagine with your families then, is it getting that perspective, like with the BLA Foundation, of knowing what's typical for that age and stage, and then understanding where you may be eligible for DLA, because actually there is a persistent need for a period of time that is expected to continue. From my understanding, that's when you can apply, isn't it, for DLA?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And part of the, perhaps we'll talk at the end about the support that, that you know, we can signpost people to. But when Helen and I run webinars about these benefits, we will help people to think about what is typically developing, you know, what does that mean at a particular age range? And help to kind of quantify it, because the decisions for disability living allowance, and I believe for child disability payment as well, are based on time, basically. So for the care component of both those awards, there are three levels of award that you can get: lower rate care, middle rate care, and higher rate care. And basically, they tot up the time that's taken that you describe that would be in addition to a typically developing child. So if you're spending about an extra hour a day doing these extra things, providing this additional care, then that would qualify you for the lower rate care award. If you are offering considerably more than that, so if you're, if you know it takes an hour at bedtime, plus you're also supporting in the, with the morning routines, and you're collecting early from school, and you're and, then that's likely to equate to the middle rate care award. And then the higher rate care award is reserved for children that need support through the day and the night time. So if you're a parent that has a child that struggles to sleep, or struggles to stay asleep particularly, and you're up in the night for either one period of at least 20 minutes or multiple shorter periods of time. So like if you, yeah, if you have a child that has nightmares and you need to go in and resettle them, if they are still awake at 1 or 2 in the morning, which is not uncommon for lots of the parents that we talk to.
Or getting up at 4 o'clock every morning.
Or getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning, absolutely. You know, that counts as night time. So that would be care that you're providing when you should be asleep, basically, which entitles you to the highest rate of care. And that's what we see lots of our children getting, don't we? Lots of the parents that we support, we see children getting the highest rate care award.
And do you find that adopters and special guardians and kinship carers, are they all informed about disability living allowance?
Generally, people who come to us, sometimes people come to us because they've come across it, they've tried, and they've kind of stopped because it can be quite baffling, quite confronting dealing with the forms. But quite often people come to us because quite literally somebody's told them, you should be doing this, go and talk to these people and go and listen to what they have to say. And they might start by exactly that question we've already looked at, which is, I don't really think probably we can, but someone said I should talk to you about it. And then we talk a bit about, ask them a bit about their daily life, what their life looks like, or we just talk about the kinds of things like we have today a little bit, and people, and then the family is quite likely to say, oh yeah. And as more and more things resonate, they kind of move from perhaps being unsure through to thinking that maybe this is something that we could do. And in some cases where it has, for example, impacted on one parent or both parents, or in a solo family, the only parent's ability to work, it does become quite literally an answer to what might have looked like an intractable problem. We are not bringing enough money into this house because I cannot work, because my child keeps getting sent home from school and I'm about to lose my job, and I've already had months and months off. What am I going to do? And it's not going to solve everything, but this can be a considerable help in enabling them to meet that need. And many of our children's primary need is not, for children who have physical needs, for example, there might be equipment and medicine that are primary needs, and then some particular types of hands-on care. For many of our children, it is literally the presence of their parents. Mm. Their and the ability of their parents to be emotionally present, so not physically present while worrying about work, or physically present while trying to also magically do stuff on their phone. Our children know when that's happening, and they spiral because they need us physically present. Mm. And that's where DLA can bridge the gap for many families.
But I think you're right. I think lots of professionals aren't aware.
Yeah.
Or perhaps, you know, there are lots of myths, I think, around disability benefits. And I think something that we haven't mentioned is eligibility in terms of family household income, for example. So, I mean, I remember thinking, oh, I won't be eligible that because we have an income coming in. You know, I won't meet the threshold, but it's not means tested. Disability benefits are there to meet the additional costs of having a child with additional health conditions or needs or disabilities. So it doesn't matter what you earn. It doesn't matter whether you have savings. Doesn't matter if you're on other benefits. And in fact, if you're on universal credit, it's actually you will get an increase in your universal credit because you will be entitled to a disability element for your household. I think as you were alluding to, there's lots of kind of a lack of knowledge, I think, out there about the existence of this.
And is that the same for personal independence payments as well then, PIP? Are they means tested?
Absolutely. It's exactly the same. Yeah, exactly the same. So PIP is the disability benefit that is applicable for children, young people who are 16 plus in England, Wales and Northern Ireland. So in England, Wales and Northern Ireland, it's called personal independence payment, PIP. In Scotland, it's called adult disability payment, ADP, but that is eligible for adults aged 18. For some reason, the rest of the UK, there's an assumption that, young people of 16 can manage their own benefits. So it's a completely different system, which is another
completely different form. Set of information you have to look at. Same aims.
Yeah.
It fulfills the same role.
Absolutely.
But it just looks completely different and works completely differently.
Absolutely. So, but it is for this. Yeah, it's for the same purpose. And actually, in terms of the weekly amounts that are paid out, it's the same amount of DLA or the same amount of CDP. But yeah, it is a bit of a transition. What we recommend people to do is get DLA in place so that they can then easily transition over to PIP or to ADP.
So, yes, you can't have them at the same time. The child gets to a certain age and then
absolutely.
In England, Wales and Northern Ireland, it goes from DLA to PIP.
Yeah, absolutely.
And but in Scotland, that happens at 18 as opposed to 16 in the other nations.
Yeah. Absolutely. So for those transitioning from DLA to PIP, because I think in Scotland there is more support actually for making these applications because it is a new system that was brought in a few years ago. And I think there's a recognition that there needs to be some help. So you can actually get appointments with advisors to help you through the process. But if we think about the DLA to PIP transition for England, Wales and Northern Ireland, it is much easier to be successful with PIP if you've already had DLA in place. If you've got a young person who is 16, 17, 20, 25, whatever, however old, you can absolutely still make a PIP claim if you haven't had DLA before. But it is a little bit more challenging. So you will need to provide, the same with DLA, a list of professionals and describe your health conditions exactly the same as with DLA. If you are transitioning from DLA to PIP, it is a slightly smoother process. An important thing around certainly PIP at 16 is that there is an expectation that a 16-year-old can manage totally independently and can do this process completely on their own. So complete the form themselves, phone up for the form in the first place, complete the form themselves, and then answer questions on a telephone call. the reality that many of our young people achieving that, you know, is tough. I mean, I don't know many typically developing 16-year-olds that could manage such a complex process. Mm. But for, you know, our children that have attachment issues and developmental trauma and, you know, lots of other conditions, expecting them to do that independently is just too big an ask. So there's a really important thing called appointeeships. And that's the recognition that actually, if you have a disability or a health condition, it's going to be really tricky for you to manage this stuff on your own. So you can have somebody help you. So if you're a parent and you're changing from DLA to PIP, then you'll be asked if you want to be your child's appointee for the next stage, for when they transfer over. And we would always recommend that you say yes.
Pretty well, invariably.
Absolutely, because that means that you'll be able to write the form on their behalf. You'll be able to speak to the DWP and attend any assessments on their behalf, and you'll receive the money into your bank account. If you're not the appointee, the child will have to complete the form, will have to answer questions on the telephone, and will receive, you know, often sort of 100 plus
pounds.
If
they manage to fill it in.
If they manage to get all the way through there.
And yeah, they manage to survive the phone call, yeah, without answering things in the way. Because many of our children, especially at 16 and 17, they also answer questions with what they want to be true. So they, yeah, would like to be able to do all sorts of things that in practice, day to day, they struggle with. But if asked by a stranger on the phone, they will either not answer, or they will answer, yes, of course I can do that. Because, yeah, that's what they would like to be able to do. Yeah. But the minute they say, yes, of course I can do that, of course the assessor goes, great. You don't need any help with that then, because, yeah, of course you can do it.
You can do it.
So being an appointee as a parent can often be vital to get to that stage before, yeah, as Sarah, I think, was going on to say,
yeah,
they get a whole load of money come into their bank account that they, mm-hmm, apparently have instant control over and, yeah, can do what they like with.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Which, aside the fact that, yes, a lot of young people I know that age, you know, might, I don't know, would struggle. I think, would any 16-year-old be able to manage that type of money, you know, successfully, independently? But it can make our kids really socially vulnerable as well. They suddenly, you know, got a lot of cash and, you know, it's not in their best interest. So being an appointee is really important.
Has that kind of been a bit of a hidden piece of information as well? Do you feel like that's quite obvious?
Did you know parents just know about
it? Totally. Yeah. And so if you're in the position, or if you're a young adult yourself thinking about making a PIP claim, then obviously, you know, go ahead and find out how to do that. If you think you might need some help from somebody, or if you're a parent wanting to do it on your young person's behalf, you can say that when you first phone up to the DWP, or you first contact Scottish Disability Benefits Service and say that you would like to become an appointee, or you would like somebody to be an appointee for you. The scoring system for PIP and for ADP is also very different, again, which is very helpful. So whereas for DLA and CDP, it's about time. It's about how much extra time, you know, you can show and you can evidence that you are providing your child. For PIP and for ADP, it's about points. And so you kind of score different points throughout a succession of daily activities, like preparing food, washing and dressing, managing money, communicating, getting on with other people. You will score at different points based on what your needs are, how much help you need from other people. So for example, that for the preparing food question, it's around, can you prepare a simple meal? So can you cook fresh ingredients? Can you chop vegetables? Can you use a hob, use an oven, follow a recipe to make something independently? And if the answer is no, if you need help from somebody, or actually if you can't do it at all, then that will accrue a certain amount of points, and those get kind of totted up at the end.
And some of that, really that example would also be about, can you do these things safely? So again, you might be able to chop vegetables, but actually using sharp knives at the moment is not a safe activity because you are not necessarily going to be able to keep you safe. So you have to understand what they mean by the questions as well sometimes. And that's where it can be quite helpful to have some insight into what are they asking. It's not on a really good day, once every 3 weeks, I could probably chop some vegetables. It's, can I reliably chop these vegetables without hurting myself or anybody else and cook them safely and make them get to the safe point where I can eat them reliably and consistently? So it's a lot of it is to do with actually understanding what the questions are getting at, but they don't necessarily spell that out.
No, absolutely. Inside knowledge is helpful.
You said you run workshops earlier then on DLA and PIP, and is this what you go over then, all the things to expect and the things to be aware of?
Yeah,
and make it less daunting, the process. I mean
it's lovely, you know, people say that they find them empowering, and I think that's a lovely word. That's what we want to do. We want to give people knowledge to feel a bit more, have a bit more kind of sense of what they're doing, a bit more, feel a bit more informed, a bit more knowledgeable and in control, I suppose, of this process, this part of the process. And so we share as much information as we can within an hour, which normally goes very quickly, to sort of take people through how things are scored, what to do when you've got your form together, what do you do with it then, how you get the award information back, what to do if you think it's wrong, which can happen. So how do you appeal a decision? What do you do if you don't believe they've made the right decision? And so we take people through and answer individual questions, and those are run at least once a month.
Wonderful. And when you are thinking that maybe, just thinking about moving forward in terms of actually finding the application, where is the best place to go then, depending on what nation you live in? Is it the general government website for England?
To find the forms, you can literally just go to the government websites and download them. They are all accessible and you can find them. You can also literally just Google for organisations that will produce some help. There are various help documents out there. Some of them you can download. Some different charities have organised things as well as the stuff that we produce. So you can literally just go and download. Just a reminder that for DLA in particular, if you do phone up and get them to send you a form, it is then backdated to the date of your phone call. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you download it and fill it in, and you eventually get it, because there's something that probably people might like to know is that when you have been through this process, there is then a delay usually in terms of how long it takes the government to process them. So it's the Department of Work and Pensions who processes generally in England and Wales and Northern Ireland, and the current wait it's often between 20 and 26 weeks, and I saw something just a couple of weeks ago that said that they heard it was 30 weeks at the moment. So there is a potentially long delay, but it will be backdated. Mm. So it is worth phoning in those instances.
Yeah, absolutely. And with PIP, you have to call to initiate the claim.
No choice.
No, you have no choice.
But your recommendation is to always call, so you've got that earliest opportunity to be backdated too. Yeah. Like, that is when you feel like you need it and that's when you've reached out. And so for England, it would be www.gov.uk.
Yeah,
and absolutely. For Northern Ireland, it's nidirect.gov.uk. And then for Scotland, mygov, so mygov.scot, S-C-O-T.
Yeah. Yeah.
Perfect.
That's brilliant.
Put those there for our listeners as well to get directly reaching
out. Absolutely. Yeah. And if you want to know more in the meantime and have a quick review, perhaps particularly of DLA. So we have a video accessible on our website, so the belayfoundation.org.uk. and you can access there a link to a 30-minute video on disability living allowance, and you can also access the booking links for our PIP webinars and our DLA webinars as well. So completely free of charge, just come along and find out more and ask questions.
And in terms of the application forms, is that all filled out online, or do you need to print it off and handwrite it? What's kind of the process for
again, it's
that?
Different.
Yeah, okay.
Obviously.
Yeah. For DLA, so you can wait. If you phone up, you will be sent a physical hard copy form booklet. It is about 81 pages long, just a little warning, it is a massive document, so you can fill that out by hand, but you can also download a DLA form from the government website. So if you Google DLA form,
as we've Bob, said,
yeah, you will be able to download it from there. For the PIP forms, you have to phone to initiate a PIP claim. Most of the time they are still using paper-based forms again, so they will send you out an allocated booklet that you complete, but in some areas of England and Wales, I'm not sure about Northern Ireland, but certainly England and Wales, they're trialling an online PIP application process, but that seems to vary sort of place by place in terms of where they're rolling that out. But in either case, yeah, you can complete, even if it's online, you can complete bits, save it, go back to it. It's quite a user-friendly process. And the important thing when sending it off is to remember that you've included any evidence that you have to send off. So with all of the disability benefit claims, actually every award, it's really helpful to find as many letters, reports, any EHCP documents, any assessments, anything that you have from sort of the previous 2 to 3 years, would say, if it's significant, certainly, and send off with your application. And if you're doing the PIP online, you sort of attach things as digital documents. It's all about making that rounded picture of the child, that this is not just, this is what I'm saying. And the important thing they're looking at is what goes on at home. So the other actually important thing to say is that don't worry if school don't see the same child that you do. So certainly if you're applying for DLA or CDP, don't be put off if actually school is saying, what's the problem? Your child is fine. Because it's about what they're like at home. And although you'll be asked to give information about where your child goes to school, and you'll be asked to give like a Senko contact or a teacher contact, it's not, they don't necessarily get in touch with them. So they don't necessarily contact them.
So your child doesn't need to be on the send register, and it could be that.
Absolutely not.
But you'd mentioned that they're a previously looked after child within your application. I imagine that question comes to light. And also, is the citizen's advice a good point of call to have help with the application process sometimes? Will they sit down and go through it?
Yeah. So that, I know that they have some limited availability, but yeah, absolutely. If you've got a good office in your area, then they can offer you appointments to go through it. There are other guides online. So for DLA, the Cerebra, Cerebra organisation produces a really good guide. And there's an organisation called Turn to Us, T-U-R-N, number 2 US, which provides support, particularly for PIP as well. Some really good PIP guides there too. So if you search for it, it is there. You just need to go looking in the first place.
That's brilliant. And it makes me think, though, how do you feel with your experience that we can raise awareness about disability benefits?
I guess that's what we were hoping to do partly today,
yes,
by talking to you and sharing the words. So if we if we can all tell one person, think about the families around us, particularly because kinship carers, special guardians, adopters often know other adopters, kinship carers and special guardians. We end up meeting each other, also meeting foster carers. There's kind of a community out there that almost forms by default. Sometimes it's the best support network many of our families have. And so if anything that anybody can do to mention it, to encourage people to even look into it. And that's why we wanted to do this today, really, is because sometimes the big step is not actually the filling in the form, however long and unpleasant the form may be. The big step is from, I don't see how that could be relevant for me. Look at the title, Disability Living Allowance, right through to, oh, maybe it is relevant for me, particularly if you've got family or friends who are saying, well, I don't know why you'd be filling that in. But actually somebody coming along and going, but your child's just like mine. Your child is so similar in these ways. And that's the kind of thing that I mentioned that can be really helpful. So just having the idea that perhaps it's worth thinking about and sharing it on and sending links around, sharing the support, sharing how to access it. Please do pass on. You know, we're on all sorts of social media like Facebook and Blue Sky and LinkedIn and Instagram and all of it. You know, sending something on saying, I've seen this, have a look, it's probably worth us thinking about. Or if you do it, I'll have a go too. Do it with another adoptive parent for both of your children. That's the kind of thing that makes a difference. And our children need this support, but they also deserve this support. They've had plenty of hard stuff going on in their lives generally. That's why we're here. They will all have suffered loss. They will all have suffered grief by the very fact that they are in the care system. And that does have ramifications for them and for us as their families. And so what we are looking to do is for people to say, actually, this is their due. We should be encouraging and supporting our families to be able to access this to help our children.
Absolutely. Yeah. So share away, spread the word. Let everyone know that this, you know, this could make a difference to your family.
And that's made me think that something we haven't covered is if you are a foster carer, how does that work? Can you apply for it as a foster carer?
Yes.
Or would the social worker apply for the household, for the child?
It's always for one child at a time. So one of the other things we haven't mentioned is potentially you might have three children, all of whom have developmental trauma, three children in a special guardianship family. All of those children may individually be eligible, and as you would in those cases apply for all three of them separately and individually. So it's never a household thing, it's always child specific. And a foster carer would be in exactly the same place. So it might be, depending on the specific setup for that foster family, that it would be a responsibility that would rest with, for example, a social worker. But generally speaking, it is most likely to be the foster carer who will have to do the paperwork. They obviously will want to call on all of the professionals around the team around the family should all be participating in providing input, potentially helping to fill it in, but the responsibility is likely to rest with the foster carer. And it's also worth saying for those of our families whose children are moving from foster care into a permanent home, some children will come with this with DLA or the process or that it will be in process. In that case, you do need to make sure that the ownership is transferred, but then obviously from then on you continue, and most awards are for a couple of years for disability living allowance, not always, but that's quite common. It can vary, and then there is a renewal process which is similar but slightly different, but then as a parent you would take that over or continue that process.
Well, and I feel that leads me to my last question of, if you had a magic wand, what would you do to ease the pressure on families who are parenting care experienced children?
Oh my gosh, so many things.
Sarah.
So many things. How long have we got?
Respite.
Yes, in-home respite for everybody. So I think there is certain, I mean, I just, wouldn't it be amazing if certain things were just in place automatically for these children that have, you know, experienced so much already in their lives. And yeah, to give them the best start, but certainly at the very minimum knowledge of disability benefits and a financial kind of assessment or financial, at the very minimum signposting towards financial support, support in education. And as we said at the very beginning, that kind of trauma responsive network of people and in-home respite. So, you know, respite is something that is talked about so much. And I think if we can make it something that's embedded within family life, so you have somebody that can come in, whether that's family, friend, or whether it's somebody that, you know, professional that comes in to provide that, that there is some regular, there's a regular adult that comes into the house that can just be an additional support to parents and to the wider family, to give our kids the best chance of success, because that's absolutely what they deserve.
Especially because so many of our kids have had very poor experiences of parenting when they're very small. That's why they've ended up in the care system. And therefore, they carry through with them worries and issues and day-to-day nervousness about being parented. So the very fact that the most influential and important people are their parents is something that often many of our children find really hard and they fight against. But somebody who is an independent adult, but nonetheless cares about them, is regular, is there for them, has a relationship just with them, and comes to their house. They don't have to go somewhere else. They don't have to be shipped off, but comes to them on a regular basis. Our experience is that that can make all the difference in the world. And that's where we actually started from, was looking to support families in that way. And then disability benefits actually became something we became involved with because we wanted to be able to help families afford what it is that they needed for their children. So actually that was where we began.
Well, I would like to say a big thank you to you both on behalf of Adoption UK, so to Sarah and to Helen. It's just been great to speak with you today and really informative for our listeners, I'm sure. And thank you for listening to Family Matters, the Adoption UK podcast. Please subscribe and get new episodes as soon as they are released.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye. Thank you.